One of my chaverim was there, you know, from yeshiva, with me, and the head of the department was teaching the class. The head of the accounting department, Steinberg, Professor Steinberg, and he was a Gera Chassid. He was out in the, you know, head of a top firm, and he at one point it was all yeshiva guys in the class. You could imagine. You know, what it was like. I wouldn't say it's quite like what you remember from high school in some of your secular classes. I don't think it was quite that bad, but, you know, it got sometimes a little bit noisy. So at one point, the professor said to my friend, I'll leave his name out for the story because it's being recorded, so-and-so, pay attention. One day, you're going to be hired to do a cost accounting analysis for a firm, for a firm, and you're not going to know what to do. So pay attention. You need to know this. So my friend looks at the professor and says, you think that I'm taking this class so I could do some cost accounting analysis for some firm? So he says, well, aren't you? He says, no. I'm taking this class. I'm going to be owning the firm. I'm going to hire some schlepper like you to do that cost accounting analysis. So you never know, you know, how people develop skills, and, you know, you don't know. I had no idea when I was in yeshiva. I didn't know I was going to go into chinuch. I'm pretty sure not until my mid-20s did I know that that's what I wanted to do. So it felt like I was in yeshiva. You know, it could be guys, you know, some of you guys could be, you are more certain, or have more sure of what you want to do, but I didn't.
Was it always like
I didn't know.
Major options, or like?
I didn't know it was an option. I didn't even know, I never heard of such a thing. I knew there was such a thing as a Rebbe, but I didn't view that as, didn't see myself as that. I saw myself as, and I was very happy that I was I passed my tests in high school, and I view myself as a teacher. And to be a teacher, you have to feel like you're, you know, I didn't have that hasaga. My father was in business, and all my cousins were, you know, professionals, accountants, and lawyers, and doctors. I didn't have a desire to do that, but I had no idea what I was going to do. The firm psychologists claim that it's high stress that yeshiva guys have. You know, 11th graders, they're already in high school, 11th graders, 12th graders, they start getting a little, you know, like sober when they start thinking about, like, what are they going to do? Like, you know, we see our parents that they know what they're doing. They look like they know what they're doing. They get up every morning, they know what they're doing.
Some guys don't think that in the
grade. Some do. Yeah, there are a few. Some do. We had one boy who applied to the high school. He was an 8th grader. And the name of our essay that you have to write is My Goals in Life. So it's pretty open-ended. You can write anything. My Goals in Life. He wants to be a baseball player. I don't know. He wants to be a... You know, anything. He wants to work on himself. He wants to work on his temper. He wants to work on math. He wants to work on Gemara. He could write about anything. You need a paragraph. It's not so much what they write, but
I just wrote it.
You get to learn a little bit. All right, you get to learn a little about the person. It's a window in, not the only window. It's a window into an application, which you're going to meet someone for 15, 20 minutes and have to make a decision on, are you taking him? That plus you see some of his grades, but are you going to really base someone's life on what grade he got in chemistry? That's not fair. So there's a lot of different ways. You can go for hair, you schmooze with him about stuff, you know. So the essay is just one of those things. One kid wrote what high school he wants to go to, what he wants to do after school, what he wants to go to college for, where he wants to live, how many children he's going to have, and where he wants to be buried. Now that's my goals in life.
That makes more sense than the other ones.
Well, it does, but it's also a sign that the boy it's a sign that the boy is tremendously stressed and almost obsessed with knowing what he's doing. And I said right away, this boy is going to have trouble, and he did. He did. We accepted him, waiting to see what happened. He was a good student, but I felt more for him. For him, he's going to have trouble, and he did. He had a lot of, I don't want to call it mental health. I don't know what else to call it. It wasn't physical.
Emotional.
So emotional. He was emotionally needy, and he needed to get help for that. And you can get help for these things. Just we're used to illness being physical, and so that you take an aspirin, take an Advil, change your diet, put on a cast or whatever, and you're better. But in terms of emotional or mental illness, we have no idea about anything. So that's very scary to people. So that's why most people, who have their first interaction, say, we think you should see someone for what? We get all, a lot of people get very scared off from that because they don't know what that is, and that the world is still embracing slowly mental health. Some of the politicians are trying to make it less of a stigma to have mental health intervention, but it's still a problem. Okay, that's not tonight's. We didn't have a topic.
Just Mr. Stores asked me how many kids I want to have. I'm say 18, you can be conscious.
Who asked you?
My sister always asked me, she's in 10 years.
People have, different. Okay, so let's see. So let's get some questions. What do you think? Anyone come prepared with a question?
Huh?
Okay.
If there's two students in the community, you have a more community school?
If there's two yeshivas, yes.
Yeah, one's like a more community school.
Yes.
And one's like a more yeshivish.
Yes.
Where would your own children, how you want your kids to come up to me more at the bento, or which school would be the more fitting school?
Well, what would be the reason not to send the kid to the
yeshiva school?
I don't know what you mean by yeshiva school.
It's only the more certain group of, like, the
more Bnei Torah.
Yeah, more Bnei Torah.
We're not against Bnei Torah.
No, but the kid comes out thinking that he's at a higher level than every other. He comes out like more of a guy type of thing. That's how society built it up.
You mean like less character refined?
So the question is, just for the record, do you send your kid to a cheder? You send your kids to a more yeshivish environment if you think they'll develop gaiva from it. And the alternative is more of a community type school where there's a more diverse group. Okay, that's a good question.
So
it has a lot of different facets.
Can we focus on the gaiva aspect?
Yeah.
How worried should we be of our kid being about gaiva? Isn't there a svara that?
It's a great question. Can I get a safer?
Maybe that's better than being depressed.
Can I get a safer?
I just want to address this question. A different facet to your question. Should you split classes into higher and lower, Gemara class, higher and lower, if being in the higher class is going to bring about gaiva? It's not the same exact case, but it's the same exact shaila. Should you have heterogeneous classes, it's a mixture of, it's not higher and lower, but rather two even classes, which is better if you're the manal or if you're a parent, which class would you want your kid to be in? He might be able to learn more than that, but do we sacrifice learning for a more balanced, midos situation?
Well, there's two issues. There's the issue of the kid, those kids and the kid, and the issue of low self-esteem.
Wait a second. Barn.
Yeah,
in your thing, how is this... Why is this guy going to have Guyver? When, first of all, what is he going to have Guyver? For the rest of his life? While he's in school.
Let a kid be a ball guy.
He thinks guy at school he's going to is better than the school that
he's going to. I don't
think the guy goes on to
Lakewood
or whatever. And everyone else
is as it is about less
going to be
character, because you
have to be
yeah. Someone who'll go to school will adopt certain yeshivish ideals and certain stuff that will need him as a less refined person. Someone
who
will go to
that school that he's not in the other school.
But at the same time, someone who went to the other school won't have the same Torah knowledge.
It's a problem.
You can almost say Chavetz Chaim or Mir.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, I have the Sharla here. I have a copy of it also. I could pass around one copy. Is this it? Yeah. You can pass this one. This is a copy of it. I'm quoting here from a Sefer. This Seder is a Kuntres that was written by Rav Chaim Siegel Zatzal, who was the Rosh Masifta Chaim Berlin. And he passed away probably in the 90s. He was an Adam Gadol, you know, very chashuva mechanic. And so he has one shalin here talking about masifta classes. Is it kedai to split the classes based on the kishronos of the talmidim? You'll have one class of mitzuyanim and one class of weak kids. Or should you have heterogeneous and split them evenly? So he asked the shal to Rav Shach, if you're following me on top of the page, I'm doing a very loose translation. He asked the shal to Rav Shach, and Rav Shach answered, any Yiddish-speaking people here? Oh, okay, fine. It says, Farvos upteilen is nicht gut aputzteilen. So I'm not sure what he answered, but it didn't sound like he said, it's not good. It's not good chinuch. So then he, Rav Chaim Siegel, said it's better for the mitzuyanim because they'll learn more. You know, they'll be bored, whatever. And he said, nein, as is far die gute euch nicht gut. It's also for the good kids, not good. Mendaf learning zusammen, you have to learn together. Und für die gar schwache, and for the weaker kids, darf men tipel miuchud, you have to have special tutoring, whatever. He spoke to other Rosh Yeshivas, he spoke to Rabbi Yashiv, and he also said you should not split the classes based on kishronos. Now, once I'm going to get to that, the obvious kasha we're going to get to. So don't ruin the drama. We're going to have a drum roll at the end of this tshuva. Have a drum roll to say, okay, why doesn't the world listen to all the gedolim? You know, why don't we do that? We only listen.
14 in Shiloh. I heard one rabbi said this. I'm very good at this. That one rabbi said that if you have a good rabbi, there's no difference between having them all together or splitting them up. If you have a good rabbi, he's able to teach the hard kids and their level and low kids to their level, even in one class, and it won't take away the fact that with the slower kids. It's,
okay.
That,
when all the rabbis are like that.
And then this rabbi were like, no one does that. And he's like, you know what, fine, I'll say it. I do that, okay? I don't know, sorry, no one else can do it. But it was a very heated debate.
First of all, he said also that he seems to be saying that you go with the higher level of the kids, and he said the lower kids should need help, not that the higher kids should.
What?
We have to wrap it into the same question. You're asking whether a
make the child losing a start. If you're not losing out, then of course you should.
Mendy raises a child, but I don't want to answer yet because it's part of a broader answer which I'm going to address. What you said. You said a very deep thing, but I don't want to pause here to expound and embellish what you said, but you said a very deep thing. So he says, V'akshav in paragraph 2, I want to explain the challenge I had for this that made me present the Sharla. Before many years, I was working in the Masifta that had two 12th grade classes. Okay? So the split was based on the Kishonos, meaning there's a higher and a lower class. One of them was for the Mitzianim, and one of those was for the Vilti Mitzianim, which is a nice way of saying, Okay? The Anhala of the Yeshiva invited the Rosh Yeshiva. I assume he's referring to Rav Huttner. And to test the Talmidim in the in their learning. The Talmidim of the weaker class came to him, Reb Chaim Siegel, and said, Rebbe, you're bringing the Rosh Yeshiva, which I believe was Rav Huttner, into our classroom. We are the dummy class, he puts it in English, the dummy class. Kita shel tipshim, the kita of the class of the stupid kids. He's not going to be impressed with us. Take him to the Iluyim. Take him to the Mitzianim class. When you're hearing this, isn't your heart panging for those kids when they had to say that to Reb Chaim Siegel? Rebbe, why are you bringing the Reshiva to us there with a dummy class? You just want to cry. Don't you just want to cry for them? I want to cry for them right now. I don't even know who they are. I want to cry. So, when I heard these words, Hergashti es hatzar baboshes, I felt their pain and their humiliation. The shiftless, the lowliness, the yish, hashore bekirbam that was singing inside them, the loneliness, the humiliation. Oz gemarti belibi, I decided in my heart, Reb Chaim Siegel says, that I will not repeat this ta'os in chinuch, this mistake in chinuch, with our children. B'li neder, forever. I will not split the classes like this, and I will not lower the kavod of lomdei Torah. Someone who's learning Torah is a great honor. I will not lower their honor. I spoke constantly to the hearts of the Talmidim, and I was mechazik them, B'tanchum shel hevel. I tried to appease them and say, no, it's fine, but they weren't buying. And they finally were maskim to be tested by the Reshiva, but I didn't really appease them. After the Bechinus, the Reshiva Zatzal said to me, with regard to the level of Talmidim who are Mitzuyan, I'm certain that if these Talmidim would be in Warsaw, in Warsaw, or be Krakow, which were the elite of the yeshiva world and of the previous generation, they'd be from the Gedolei Torah V'Yira. However, since they're now in America, they need Siyata Deshmaya, that they should mature to their potential, and we have to daven in tefillas haderech for them. It's like a euphemism, tefillas haderech, tefillah that they should be on the derech, you know, tefillas haderech. With regard to that was his assessment for the better kids. If they'd be in Warsaw or Krakow, they would be as good as ever. But in America, you have to daven, siyat d'shmaya, they shouldn't go off the derech. Benogea, but with regard to the kita chalasha, with regard to the weaker class, Huloka Chasarebi, he referred to the Rebbe, who was one of the great Talmidim of Aaron Cutler, and he put his hand on the shoulders of the Rebbe. This is Rav Huttner speaking to Rav Chaim Siegel, and I guess they're conversing about how the kids did. So he put his hands on the shoulder of the Rebbe, who was from the great Talmidim of Rav Aaron Cutler, and he said, Rav Simcha Zisel says, with regard to the Talmidim Bali Kishrin, very brilliant, you need Trichim Rebbe v'b'chinas gon, to find a Rebbe to teach the Aleph class, you have to have a Rebbe who was classified as a gon. But to find a Rebbe for the Talmidim that are weak, Tzrichim Rebbe Gon HaGonim. You have to have a Rebbe, not just a Gon, but a Gon Shebegonim. This was my challenge, that when you split the classes and you make two or three classes for the weaker ones, B'derech Klal, they're not going to find a Rebbe who's a Gon Shebegonim, and therefore you have to keep them heterogeneous classes.
What was he saying to the Rebbe? He's saying that you're not a Gon Shebegonim, or that he was?
I don't know. There was a quarter of him from Rav Sim. He was a Talmud of Aaron Kala, and he quarter of Simcha Zusel. Yeah, and you don't have a Gon Shebegonim. Therefore, you should desist from splitting the classes that way. So I just want to tell you that we were in Miami here, and I had seen this kuntras. My father-in-law gave me this. You know, he was my brother-in-law learned the Chaim Berlin, and he was a Talmud of Chaim Siegel, and it could be that as a gift. He had two copies of this. He gave me one. No, that we are brothers-in-law because we married sisters. My wife's brother. So, you know, he's a Rebbe now in Binary Show. So, he was close to Reb Chaim Siegel. Rabbi Tendler's son-in-law is my brother-in-law, Steinhardt. So, this was really, we were in Miami, so we had this group. There were four boys who were, I won't say their names, but they're all in the system, you know, still today. Four great boys. It was a 10th grade class, and there were 20 kids in the class. 16 sort of fit into one group, and four were like Mitsuyanim. So we wanted to split the class, 16 and 4.
What grade?
10th grade. Four kids. Now, they were always together. It's 20 kids. Now, you can have 20 kids in a class. But there were four kids who so surpassed everyone else. They were like holding a Tosfos, and the other guys couldn't read Gemara. They were more average, and these kids were like Mitzianim, like no Shaykhus. So I wanted to split the class. And I didn't know what to do, and I don't know how, but I found this tshuva. So I thought this is a good Hashkafa Shaila. This is a great Hashkafa Shaila. I sent a copy of this. The reason why I have a copy of this is because I had made a copy to send it to the Reshiva. I sent this to the Reshiva with a written, I'm pretty sure I have my Shaila written up. And there was a tkufa that the Reshiva's hearing was difficult, but his mind was a million percent. The Reshiva at the end, the last 3 years, it was hard to ask Shailas to that. It was hard to know what he fully got. Yeah. He was talking and everything, but you know, it was like Be'ian Ravi stopped giving shir the last 3 years. It was hard to know. But before then, he knew everything. But the way you had to ask Shailas from, if you weren't in New York, you had to write. You had to fax everything, and then call the secretary or the Rebbetzin, who will repeat over the whole shaila. So I had to fax this whole shaila in with this, and I called, you know, Shimon Yishal, Rabbi Yishal. No, he don't see.
So he's reading.
He could read it, but he wanted to make sure, like he didn't have time. So it's like he had time to like sit back and read. So he was so busy. It's like, he had to make sure that someone explained it to him so he would focus, you know, and hear it. And we asked, I showed him this, the tshuva for Chaim Siegel, and we want to split the class. So the Reshiva told me like this. He said, with regard to the Etzim Shaila, should you split classes by level or not, I agree with the tshuva. Shouldn't. Have heterogeneous classes. But I disagree with the reason. He says, Lagabi, the reason of that they'll feel like the dummy class, which is what he concentrates on, and why Reb Chaim Siegel desisted from this behavior. Reshiva felt that all is not lost. Kids can recover from that calamity, that trauma of not being the, you know, the excellent class. They'll get over it. You can resurrect them. You can do it. It's not a good feeling, but you think there's a more compelling reason not to do it. And he said, because the Mitsuyan class will develop gaiva. And once they get as Gaiva, they can't be a Talmud anymore. So now let's get back to Yeshayala. I know, as a little roundabout. With regard to Yeshayala, I would say like this. You know, if the kid's going to develop Gaiva, then that's very serious. It's very serious. So that's the parent's job. The schools don't control how kids react. You know, they use all these different techniques. There's so many kids in the class, and you know, the Rebbe's trying to make the kids feel good and proud of their learning. So they tell them that, wow, you're learning so much. No one ever learned like you before since Varsha and Krakow. And the kids walk around, you know, telling their friends that I'm as good as Varsha and Krakow, and you're whatever. Yeah, Rebbe, you have to be careful, but they don't know, you know, always how the kids are going to take it. But at home, the home has to be the place where the parents bring, you know, rationale and modesty and shiflus and, you know, invite some of the other kids over and, you know, oh, wow, you're able to learn fast. They don't learn as fast. Maybe you want to help them. Like, that's the job of the parents to make sure that doesn't happen. Now, if the parents aren't going to do that and there's going to develop real gaiva, yeah, that's a real issue. I think there's a real shiloh. It is a real shiloh. But the Eitzah is, a person is supposed to bring Anivus into their home. So they see how the father acts when he goes to shul and the other members of the community don't go to shul. And, you know, is it gaiva? I mean, they have to have a little gaiva, they should be proud. But they also have to feel a certain achrayus, like they're the bentori, he's proud of the fact he's a bentori, and they're trying to get other people. Like Rabbi Minkowitz told me that when he first moved to Manalapan, this is before the lighter's move there. And he told me that when they just moved there, I spent a little time with him. And he told me, what did they do? What was their big activity? There's nothing going on in Manalapan, by the way. They had to take me something to like entertain me. They took me to ShopRite. You know, I got a little inkling. The manager at ShopRite, who I was speaking with, told me that this is one of the biggest kosher meat markets in New Jersey, Manalapan. So I said, "What's your busiest day?" He said, "Saturday." It's the biggest kosher meat sale day is at ShopRite on Saturday. So you can figure out from that what Manalapan is all about. And Rabbi Minkowitz told me that on Shabbos, on Hanukkah, the big activity he did with his kids, they were all very little, they used to go around to see if they can count, see if there are any other Hanukkah menorahs in the windows. Because they couldn't find any Jews. Hanukkah, you could find a Jew because you see the Hanukkah menorah. And it didn't make a difference with electric or non-electric, you know. And you know, you have to be careful, you know. The kids have to learn that there's humility that's what we believe, that humility is what Derech Eretz Kadmo LaTorah. That's how you build it. So yeah, if it's going to be with Gaiva, yeah, I wouldn't send my kid to a school cheder if they're not steeped in, you know, in Midos Tovos. We believe that, you know, Torah Musar, and that's be with Musar. I can't imagine people are not, you know, people are just totally trampling on Midos. Then yeah, I wouldn't send my kid to a from school that weren't careful on Midos, and the Rebbeim were not makbid on Midos, and they were just allowing bullying and gaiva to reign. That's terrible. We hear stigmas like that. I don't know of anyone. You know, I think the world has become very more sensitive to, yeah, Midos projects in schools, how to teach the kids Midos, and like, it's not all lip service. You know, it's a little bit real. A little bit. So, but yeah, but the parents, just to know that your Shiloh is a real Shiloh. I really hear the Shiloh. If it was my kid and I thought I'm choosing between more learning and bad Midos, I would choose. No, if it was more learning and bad Midos, or more learning or more Midos, I really would choose the Midos, but I wouldn't just do it haphazardly. It would just mean that I felt that they couldn't get the right Midos there. I would think that my kids would have picked up enough in my house that they would know that that's totally so not appropriate. So that's really important. That's why you have, you know.
So
you
then, why does she feel that you should have non-spoke classes if your house is going to be? Your house is going to take care of that problem.
Right. So it happens where the Rashiva did hold Yishun's split classes. And just to get back to the Kasha, David asked, so how come we have higher and lower classes? Not our own high school, we have it. I asked the Shaila. So one Teretz is, I'm not the principal anymore. But no, but even when I was principal, we had this. But we came up with a Teretz. I spoke to Rabbi Grunblatt, who was already in Queens when the Shaila was presented to Rashiva. And Rabbi Grunblatt knew the kids.
Why did you look for a Teretz?
A Teretz to what?
To the question. Rabbi said he found a Teretz.
I asked a general question, should you split classes? And the Rashiva said no. Then I needed to follow up, and I spoke to Rabbi Grunblatt and said, like, you know, in generally speaking, okay, so we're not going to split classes, but we have these four boys who just don't fit in their class, what should I do? So Rabbi Grunblatt felt that there are extreme matzavim. You weren't trying to make a matzuyin class; you're trying to make a class for them. You know, like you wouldn't put. Let's say you have, you know, one class, first grades and eighth grade in your school. It's eight grades, but you only have first graders and eighth graders there. So, and you only have 10 kids. Nobody would say to put the first graders and the eighth graders together. So, such a situation, you can have a higher and lower, you know, eighth grade and first grade. Rabbi Grunblatt felt that particular Shaila, that Shaila was so extreme that the weaker kids, aren't going to feel like they're the dummy class, and the strong class aren't going to feel like the Gaiva class, because they were so disparate that it was already understood that they're in different schools. So he felt it was okay. So I want to get that. That's the icker. So we came up with
why is every grade is not
sometimes it's
top of the mountain, they aren't going to be that big.
Sometimes if it's like so clear that they're not on the same level, the one guy can't read Aleph Beis and one guy's doing Reb Kiv Eggers, you can have a higher and lower in that case.
Every class, the top guys are doing Eggers and the bottom guys are doing
Aleph Beis. And there's
everyone in the middle.
There's an area we're gonna hock it out in a minute. I know there's an area that we have to hock because it's not a clear yes or no. That question I want to get to is why we do it now. So what we do now is we think we are, you could argue or challenge if you like, or if I even prefer, you know, what we do now is we do have honors classes and regular classes, but our teretz is, it's not Aleph and Beis classes, Mitzion and Weaker. We hold that any student can choose to go to the honors class. We don't decide which class they go to. The honors class has more rigorous standards. You have to work harder. You're going to have to work out of class. You're not going to be able to do well unless you chazer. You already put in time outside of class. Maybe you have to put in time on Shabbos. Not everybody's ready to put in that extra time. So the honors shear is calibrated differently for a kid who's putting in extra time. And anyone who wants to join that class can go. So that we felt that.
And you guys sign up sheets.
Before you ask me specifically how we do it, I'm just giving you the model that we did, which we think conforms to these rules. That they didn't speak about such a situation. Yeah, that's okay because they can choose to go to the class, and we do it for math and science and English and social studies. Any kid can choose to go to an honors math class or regular. Every class in every grade has two options, and sometimes three if there's like a need for a remedial. So that's like special tutoring. Okay, but every single kid can choose if they want to go to honors or regular, and theoretically, at least in our minds, we think that it's conforming to this, because if you're ready to work extra hard and be more rigorous, you'll end up knowing more. Some guys don't want to do that. They're not interested in math. They'll take an honors Gemara class, But they don't want to spend their time on myth. Some guys do the opposite. I want to learn myth. I'm not ready to do honors Gemara. So they'd rather spend their extra time on myth. So that's our teretz. You know, you say not looking for terutzim, but that the way you make a more diverse program, some guys are just, you know, need more challenge in myth because that's what makes their mind work. So we need to give them advanced myth, but the other guys can't learn that myth. So we have to provide them with it. So that's how we do it over here. Now, Mendy's asking me specifically about ninth grade. Well, I'll get to, you know, which I'm getting to. But the basic hashkafa that we do is that the kids choose which class they go to. Yes, directly the ninth graders. The ninth graders get a form in the mail when they're accepted. Sometime in May, there's a form of which class they want to be in. But since they don't know the school and they don't know the curriculum, we also use teacher recommendations. So if someone is choosing something that has no shaychus, we get them involved more for ninth grade than we do for others. But we don't just like, you know, so it's a little bit more tricky for kids who don't know the school because they don't know what to choose.
So I challenge that for the sake of conversation.
Yeah. Challenge it, even just stop to challenge it.
Stop to challenge it, but I'm not sure whether I believe in my challenges or not. If for people in the bottom line, there are still, it's still going to evolve, even with this choosing system, into a class of Mitzuyanim and a class of not Mitzuyanim. And some people might necessarily not believe that they're capable, whether believing this through the system or believing them just because they know themselves, that they're not capable of doing a higher class, and maybe really they are. Or at the same time, if the higher class is held to higher standards, then those standards themselves are going to separate the Bacharim with the same results that the teacher separating the Bacharim would. It's almost as natural selection. Just naturally, it will show everyone, well, we're the superior, we're the not as smart.
And myth.
And Gemara too. Well, to bring up a math, my school had it. And when I was in high school, we had an honors track and a regular track. And they would give a diagnostic test in the beginning, but anyone who wants to go anywhere can go anywhere. But it was known. You go to the higher class, they were for smarter people. It's the same way.
For the kids?
It was math. It was the same way in English. We have a small school. Those are the only two divided classes. But in the process of this natural selection, the standards themselves, whether it's the standards as opposed to the teachers, I'm not sure it makes a difference in removing this self-esteem hit on the kids.
I remember when I was in ninth grade, I was put into the slower math class, and the teacher came on the first day, and he said to us, "I know you guys are the weaker class, but I'm telling you, if you really work with me, you're going to all get hundreds and you're going to outperform the other class. You can outperform them. You guys in?" And we were all like, "Oh my God, this is like really, really like in their face then. We're in." And we momish, like he did, he was such a genius one-liner to manipulate us into working hard for ninth grade algebra, that we were in. Like, we worked so hard back this, and we did outperform the other class. That class typically did not take the ninth grade region in algebra. They took the citywide exam. Imagine, you didn't compete against the state test, you competed against the city test. New York City is Harvey Madrigas below the state standard. But we took the regular state test, and we did outperform them. And, you know, the teacher did not buy into, thankfully, he did not buy into the split. He felt, and this goes back to what Mendy said before. That was you, Mendy, right? Who said this before? That if the teacher is really good, there's such a thing called...
It does.
I want to get back to this. There's such a thing called differentiated instruction, that if a teacher is skilled a skilled teacher is able to differentiate his instruction to offer the academics equally well to the different factions in the class. He can address the stronger kids, the medium kids, and the weaker kids if as effectively as the other. And that is, you know, done with skill, with training. A person can be a differentiated instructor. And yeah, he, yeah, for sure. I'll give you an example. The Beis Medrash has a lot of differentiated instruction. Let's assume everyone's, you know, showing up and doing what they have to do. So, you know, you come to Rabbi Lubin's shir. You know, you have, let's say, 10 guys in the shir, and there's 5 chavruses, and they're all preparing the material and on different levels. One person prepared it, and they, who knows, with Mechavan to the Rajbas and the Marsha. The other person was getting pushed out in the Gemara. Rabbi Lubin is not necessarily discussing the Rajbah, not necessarily discussing the... But through the Hachana, Rabbi Lubin is discussing things that they can all discuss and weigh in. He may not bring in the Rajbah, but they're learning it on different levels, because one person is contrasting the material discussed, whether it fits into the Rajbah, and the other one didn't learn the Rajbah, so they're just getting push of shot from it. So they're learning the same material. I always say Gemara is a great example, because if can you imagine any other textbook, say math, because David mentioned math before, is any textbook where you could have the same textbook for a fifth grader as a 10th year Beis Medrash guy? You know, that's a range of 11 to 25. There's a 14 years range of students. They're using the same textbook, the same book. What? Using the same book? No other outside, no COVIDs. You know? Just that? So until I was in Eretz Yisrael with the 12th grade once, we went to visit Reb Shia, the famous Reb Lubin's, you know, Reb Shia. So, or maybe it wasn't Reb Shia, maybe it was another one of his, you know, Gedolim friends who I don't remember who it was, who was a Talmud of Reb Baruch Ber. I thought it was Reb Shia, but maybe it wasn't Reb Shia. It was a Talmud of Reb Baruch Ber. And he told us that, Reb Lubin wasn't there, you know, he told us that when he was in Kamenetz, learning Reb Baruch Ber, his dira was right across from Reb Baruch Ber, where he lived. And, you know, there were no air conditioners those days, and people didn't lock their doors, and they didn't shut their windows, and it was hot, there were no fans, there was barely electricity, you know. He says he remembers at night, he would be in his dira, and Reb Baruch Ber was sitting in his, you know, I don't know if you call it a living room, I don't know if they had a living room, and in his house with the window wide open, and he was learning Abaye Yomayi Shlomi Das Lavi Yis Abaye Haptazak. Abaye says, and he was going over the Pashut Pshat of the Gemara and Rashi. The Pashut Pshat and Rashi, he was going over this till 1, 2 in the morning, just getting clearer, just the steps. So there are so many different levels of Gemara. That's the genius, or the almost the magic, or the mystical component of Torah, that it can be learned on so many different levels, thousands of different levels of learning. So I don't know. Maybe math also can be done that way. I don't know. I never heard
that. That happens. Like,
oh, sure. And a Rebbe has to know that he's a good Rebbe, effective Rebbe. First of all, lectures don't. You can't do if you're lecturing. In high school or anything, lectures don't lend itself to differentiated instruction. Don't lend itself to that. But you know, you have to be really, really well planned, like Rabbi Dudovitz does. I don't think it's textbook differentiated, but he does differentiate. He writes 3 or 4 different tests. He has different groups, and he has the kids know which group they're in. And he tries to get them during the year group A, he tries to move them into group, you know, move them up to group B, into group C. And he has everyone, at the end of the year, he spends a lot of time on this, trying to move different groups up. And then he has a one group he calls the graduated group. You graduated. So now you're postgraduate in my class. So, and he sends those guys to the base medrash to prepare the, you know, some marmukam on the Gemara. It's all just trying to juggle different.
And that's easier to do than just teaching you a
much harder to do, because it's harder to do because you
the
work extra hard. But
yeah, I think therefore you have to put them all together.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we did the Bava Basra last year, so Reb Shulman Gamla made the gzera that, you know, after people started forgetting Torah, that they made yeshivas b'chol plach plach. You have to have a class, you know, but once is more than, once the number exceeds one in a classroom, you already have to deal with differentiated instruction. You know, you guys learning with any high school kids? If you're learning one-on-one, it's fine. When you have one-on-two, that's one of the... I love getting those questions from the base manager guys. What should I do? They gave me two guys on such different levels. I can't learn with them. And it's real. But I said, oh my gosh, I remember the, you know, but you can imagine a Rebbe has to deal with 20 of them. And that's really hard. So, and you have to succeed. You can't afford to lose any neshamas. So you have to be
easier?
Huh? It's not easier. 20 is harder. What do you mean easier?
Putner says you have to put them together.
You need a Ganyan in order to teach a lower shear. Therefore, you have to put them all together because we don't have a Ganyan. Because if you put them all together, then it doesn't take a Ganyan. Why not?
Right. Because. Well, you tell me. What do you think he meant by that? He doesn't explain here. You want me to say a pshat so you can slug it up? Or you,
no.
You say a pshat, I'll slug it up.
Or you can say a pshat to say
a pshat. Huh? What?
Or you can just say a pshat to say a pshat.
No, I wasn't trying to save Shatner or Putner. I just said like that, like he depicted that you have to be really, really good to get through to the weaker kids. That's what he was saying. That,
well, no,
that a weaker kid is much harder to learn with.
So we don't have Ganyan nowadays.
I don't think we have Ganyan either.
Oh, but sir, okay, so Benji's point is it doesn't help to jumble them with higher kids.
It's still bad. You still won't help lower kids.
Okay, but yes.
Do we have a question that? Not splitting it into two classes based on ability will denigrate the Mitzvah's potential.
If you would have that case, we have first graders and eighth graders, and you put them together because that's all you have. Yeah, I could see the eighth graders getting really bored and lose interest.
So it's not.
Never mind not using interest by not giving the smarter kids the ability to learn on a higher level. Will that hurt their future results?
It depends. But it depends. You know, it's not a schmooze to slug up. You have to see where we're putting this guy. He's trying to make a point. Yeah. You could find the scenario where you can slug up. You know, maybe something a better eitzah, but. You know, David's questioning here, like, but what about the better kids? Isn't the mind a terrible thing to waste? Isn't that the expression? You know, is that going to mess them over for learning? It really depends. If, you know, what is the Gemara says in Ksubis? That if you steal someone's Eved, then you're not obligated. You steal someone's Eved and use them, then you know, Bezin finds out, they don't make the guy pay. You don't have to pay for the use that used his Eved. When he gets caught. Why? Because the Baal, if he would have known that you're already stealing his Eved, he would tell you to work his Eved. Why? Because he doesn't want to develop Atzlus. If you take him, you know, I steal him, but I'm not allowed to use him, and he's going to have him be Yoshev Batel, he's going to develop Atzlus. So, it depends. If you're going to have the, you know, better kids, you know, listen, I have to get every kid to make sure he knows the pshat, and you have to just sit there and wait until I explain it to him, and that's all the Rebbe does, or the teacher does, yeah, that could be damaging over the long haul. That kid gets restless, and behavior problems come up, and the guys get mischievous, and they just got to do something. They need activity. Yeah, you have to prepare what they're going to do, and you have to create an environment where there's, you know, you can have them, the better kids helping the weaker kids. You have to kind of create some kind of activity.
Were those four kids until it was attacked?
We didn't think it was Shaykh. We didn't think it was Shia. The mice said there was no resentment.
Just get back to my question. You were saying that Homer was really not in that. He just.
Footnote simply said a statement, which is a good statement. To teach Mitzionim, you have to go. To teach weakers,
go. Did he say therefore?
He was trying. It was a soundbite.
No. So who said that? That was the guy who said that, or
no? I think he quoted Rabbi Simcha
Zissel.
No.
You said it as part of the
therefore,
story.
Therefore, we're wrong. Together. And I'm saying who said there? Footnote the receipt.
Rabbi Simcha Zissel.
Someone just says
different from the other. He said, "Reb Simcha Zissel Amar, ba Talmidim Bali Kishron Iluyim Tzrichim Rebbe Bepchinas Gon, ba Talmidim Kalashim Tzrichim Rebbe Gon Hagonim." Reb Simcha Zissel said it for real. That to teach weaker kids, you need a better gon. That's all. He didn't say therefore anything. He just said.
No one said therefore anything.
No one said therefore anything. We're saying that. You think if you split the class that you've covered everything, you may not have covered everything. It may not be so simple. Maybe you did cover. Maybe you do have a good solution, but not so simple. That's all he's saying. It's not so simple because you may not have covered what you thought you would have covered. So just for like to summarize the, I don't have to get going, but just to summarize the great topic, the great topic that. The issue, this is a big issue of Gaiva. Reshiva held that once Gaiva sets into a Talmud, Gaiva makes a Talmud not a base kibble for learning. So I had a Maisa with a kid.
We see people who come from Yeshiva soon where they had,
Well, I think everyone Gaiva works on Gaiva, but.
No,
I assume.
So they were able to deal with it.
Gaiva makes it difficult to be a Talmud. I guess to a certain extent, we're not, Moshe Rabbeinu was the honor of being called of them, and I assume that means everyone else has a little bit of Gaiva. So Gaiva makes it difficult for us. So just to hear that doesn't mean he's only going to have Gaiva. It doesn't mean when you say he has Gaiva, it means there's no anivus. Just means he has a little much Gaiva. It's really hurting. It's hurtful. Doesn't mean he can't get smicha.
They would have been better off if they would have been in the mix.
They would have been better off if they wouldn't have had the guy.
Well, once you're in the upper class,
there might be other ways to solve it. I'm not saying if you have a higher and lower class, vadai your gaiva and they can't learn. They were saying there is his experience, and I think that maybe there are ways of. There are ways
to.
Are
ways for the school to do it, or ways personally?
I think our way is a way around this concern.
A lot of schools don't do the way
to
do it.
Do Aleph Beis Gimel Dalet Hey.
Right. So there are people who come out of Aleph who are
Bali Gaiva, and their kids who come out the Hayes who are on the streets doing drugs because they're the lowest creatures on earth.
But the people who come out from the Aleph doing...
And there are people come out the Hayes who also okay. But you have a lot of casualties on both sides. You have casualties. Now, is it possible to minimize the casualty? Yeah. If the Rebbe will come in like Mr. Plattner, who came in and said to the weakest class, we can take those guys. Are you guys in? Yeah, he got around the dummy class syndrome. It worked. And the better guys could say, if we learn this well enough, you can teach that class and you can help them and these guys will be so good and you want to do that. Yeah, that Rebbe has gotten around the Gaiva because they're learning Lulamed and they become, using their skills as a leadership skill. That's fantastic. There are ways to get around it. He's just saying that making higher and lower, there's a built-in chisaron. But there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. Just realize that the purpose of this session is just to realize these are the hazards you're dealing with. One way to do it is heterogeneous class. Okay, it's not all or nothing. These things, it's not all or nothing. It's like, just be aware of what you're doing right now, putting them together also causes problems. Sometimes you have kids who leave the school because you're not providing service to my kid. And that's not good either, because the alternative is they're going to public school. So if they're going to go to public school, you got to figure something out. You may have to make a higher and lower class.
So the reason why the school does the way they get around it, right? And they're not okay with just putting them all together is because the parents don't like it?
No, if I cared. We want to encourage kids to do the best that they can and read and fill out.
But, I mean,
like these Montessori schools, like they have not classes. They have like six, like a school will have six levels of shiurim. And it doesn't go by grade. When you do one, when you feel you've mastered that, you go to the second one. You do that. Now, you know, in many cases, the ninth grader is on the first one and the 12th grader is on the sixth one.
You are giving up something by having one with the other. It's just
not, you're giving up something, right? But you're giving up less. And it could be, if you really a master teacher, you may be able to figure out a way how to contravail some of these hazards.
Why is it always at the bigger lines and always gives higher shear?
It happens to be in the base medish this year. We sort of, it's my first year in base medish, but it was presented more to the guys which shear they want to go to. That was the first time we did that.
No, I'm saying Rebbeim. That's always Rebbeim.
What about Rebbeim?
Generally, when you have in high school, they offer the base shear, so generally the bigger line gives the option and gives the base shear. Why is that?
I'm not sure if it's as much as it's the bigger Lamdan as if it's the one who's the Lamdan and the type of Lamdan suited for the class, in addition to having the necessary skills for that type of level.
How do you know?
No.
You learn with them. Huh?
It is. I mean.
Huh? Maybe in that,
you know, examples?
Yeah. Didn't ever watch the Shining Yomzer.
I suspect you're not right on that hashara. I had a maisa in yeshiva. The camp needed to hire. They didn't have any married bungalows, and they needed to hire a rebbe for the ninth grade. You couldn't just get it. There were no marries. They had to get like a Mitsuyan Bacher, who's not 18, someone who's like 22, to like be the Rebbe. So there's only like how many guys who are 22 ready to be a ninth grade Rebbe? Wouldn't have been me. I would have been so scared to do that. So there's usually a couple. So they had their eye, the camp had their eye on one guy who had been a counselor a couple years before. But you know, the yeshiva, you can't get away for 2 months. Camp needed to hire someone for 2 months, and they called the reshiva. I was in camp, but they called the reshiva. They had spoke to the Rebbetzin to ask permission that one particular Mitsuyan guy should be allowed to come to camp to be the ninth grade Rebbe for the summer, 8 weeks. Be 12 Mitsuyanim, that the best kids from all over the country. They had the CIT program. It was like the 12 Mitsuyanim. So
scholarships.
Yeah, whatever. So the reshiva, I happened to be in the house like later that day when the call came in. Reshiva said, "I don't understand. Why don't they take so and so? You know, he finished the program, he was still single. He finished the program. Why don't they take him?" So I said, "The reshiva, I sounded exactly like you just sounded." I said, "Rebbe, you can't compare these two guys. He's a much bigger Lamdan, 23-year-old. He's a much bigger Lamdan.
The guy who they wanted, the guy who she said.
The guy who the camp wanted is a much bigger Lamdan." I said the same thing you did in the exact same tone, and the Rashiva said, "What?" He says that guy could put him away. He's a much bigger Lamdan, but he. His personality was very like when he talks, it looks like he's trying to say the tai chi of the Gemara. What does this word mean? But in terms of the Rashiva said, in terms of his ability to, you know, chew up a piece of Gemara and understand its clarity, the Rashiva said that person was a much bigger Lamdan. So how do you know?
So if one guy is twice the age of that guy,
so age doesn't go by. There's only age. My age. I'm just saying, like, how do you know?
So why doesn't
it always...
Well, and who we think is the bigger Lamdan may not be the bigger Lamdan. Maybe he comes across because he's He's maybe a quicker thinker, but quicker thinkers aren't necessarily the bigger lamdan. It could be the Pashto kid, you know, who just always asks the right question. Maybe he's really the bigger lamdan. Maybe that's why he likes giving that shir, and maybe that's why maybe he's the, you know, maybe that's. I'm not trying to be contrary. I'm just saying, like, who said you're right? I was wrong. The Rishiva said I was wrong. I trust the Rishiva. He had no reason to tell me that. And the camp did not buy it. They didn't hire that. Older guy.
Did they hire the younger guy?
Yeah. Did the Rishiva let him go? I think they did. I think the Rishiva did let him go in the end.
So they took the guy from camp. The camp did not have the original owner.
Well, then the guy himself started nudging Rashiva, and I don't remember the details of that. Okay, who's taking care of the recorder? Thank you very much.